Hi. Well, I'm going to start, and I think there's going to be a couple extra people that are going to filter in. But okay, so to start, my name is Caitlin, and I am the recruitment lead for the Middle East and North Africa. If any of you are, re-applicants or have attended webinars in the past, I've been the regional lead for the Middle East and North Africa for about 4 years now. I have a new last name, so if you don't recognize the last name, it's same person, just new last name. So what are we going to talk about today? This session is meant to provide you with some details about awards that are available in the region and the application process. But the overall goal and hope is that you'll get a sense of what makes Fulbright opportunities in this region in particular very special. I'm going to start with a brief introduction of the Fulbright Scholar Program and the application, and then I'm going to spend a big chunk of time discussing points related to the opportunities that are available in the region for the 2020-2021 academic year. While I hope to answer many of your questions during the course of my part of the presentation, there's also going to be a question and answer session at the end. During which you can submit your questions by typing into the questions module on your screen. I'm happy to answer questions as we're going through. So if you have questions and you want me to stop, just type into the box and I'll try and take some questions as we're going through. I'll probably save some of your questions for the end. I'll say if your question is really specific to your particular case, I may respond to you privately after the presentation. Okay, so as some of you may already know, the Fulbright Program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. Having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. Using the sale of surplus U.S. government World War II property to fund the program at its outset, he introduced the bill to Congress, and it was signed into law by President Truman. And the Fulbright Program today remains the flagship international exchange program designed to increase mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and people of other nations. And it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. And the program is administered in close collaboration with U.S. embassies, Fulbright commissions, and the Institute of International Education, which is the agency that I work for. We administer the program on behalf of the Department of State and the Fulbright Commission. And today, the program operates in over 140 countries worldwide, and its alumni include 82 Pulitzer Prize winners and 59 Nobel Prize winners. So before we discuss the MENA region in general, I want to review the basic eligibility requirements for Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards. At the time of application, there are several eligibility requirements that must be met. U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status is not sufficient. Let me see. I'm seeing some of your comments. Okay. Thank you for letting me know. Let me see if I can get these slides up and rolling. Okay, you guys should be able to see the eligibility requirements now. Okay, great. Thanks for letting me know. Okay. Like I said, U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status is not sufficient for eligibility purposes. And then depending on which award you would apply to, a PhD or other professional terminal degree may be required. So for professionals and artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of a terminal degree. In the Middle East and North Africa, there are certain countries where a PhD is required to teach. So if we have anyone here on the webinar that doesn't have a PhD or has a master's degree or any other different kind of degree, just reach out to me and I can make sure that you're eligible for the country or countries that you're interested in going to. We also, depending on the award, may require some teaching experience. Typically that looks like 3 to 5 years of teaching experience, but that, again, will be detailed in the award description. And then I also want to mention that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous U.S. scholar grants. So if we have any Fulbright alumni on the line, if you've previously held a U.S. scholar grant within the past 2 years, you'll want to review these policies or contact us just to ensure that you're eligible to apply this round. There is no lifetime limit on the number of Fulbrights that you can have. There is a 2-year waiting period between when you finished your first grant and when you would be eligible to apply for another. So for example, if you finish your grant in July of 2017, then you would be eligible to apply again in July of 2019, which would make you eligible to apply in this cycle. Okay, and what does the application look like? It's pretty straightforward, and the page limits I'm going to mention today are hard limits, so if you go over, you'll end up hearing from us at the technical review stage of the review process to modify your application materials. So, you know, read the directions and stay within the page limits. We will sort of catch those, we'll catch things if they go over, and we'll just ask you to change it. In addition to a standard form with all your personal information, which is all done online, we ask for a 3 to 5 page project statement. Broadly speaking, this document should address what you propose to do, how you propose to do it, why it is important, and what benefits it is going to produce for you, your host institution, the host country, and as well as your home institution back here in the U.S. There's a ton of guidance about the project statement on our website, including some prompting questions and samples. So I really encourage you to review those resources on our website. They're very helpful. You'll also need to submit a tailored CV of up to 6 pages, including a publications list. Try to keep it to what is most relevant. I understand that as academics, a lot of you are going to have, you know, 10, 20-page resumes. You're going to want to trim them down to what is most relevant to the project that you're working on. And make sure that you're sort of not reiterating anything that can be found elsewhere in the application. For example, there is a section of the application that talks about language proficiency, so that's something that you could leave out of your CV if you're sort of struggling to cut down to the 6-page limit. 3 letters of reference are required. If you're proposing to do any teaching, at least one of those letters must address your teaching. So someone that has seen you in the classroom or has been a part of your teaching, you know, review process, a department chair or something like that, would need to speak to your teaching abilities. We have requirements for submission of references on our website, but I want to underscore that applicants must register their referees in the online application. And the references must be submitted via the online application. You can not submit a reference for someone, and we do not accept them as mailed-in references. It's all fairly straightforward in the online application. If you are proposing to teach, you'll need to submit 2 to 3 sample course descriptions or syllabi, up to 10 pages in total. These course descriptions should be designed by you and be expressive of your philosophy of teaching. And you'll want to indicate whether they've been used previously or have been developed for your application. And it really doesn't matter to us whether they're old or new, or you can do a mix of old and new. Either works. If you're going to be conducting research, we will need to see a 3-page bibliography. Which I think is one of the most commonly misunderstood parts of the application. The bibliography is not an extension of your project statement of work cited from that document. The bibliography is more like a lit review, but without the really excessive annotation. There's no standard format for it, so you can really organize it however you'd like, but it should reflect the current state of research on the proposed topic and include articles written by scholars other than just yourself. I've seen it done a lot of different ways. One idea for you, I've seen people sort of split up the articles that they're citing by theme. So introducing sort of a theme, and then here are 10 articles on that. Here's another theme. Here are 10 articles on that. That's one way to organize it, but you can sort of do it in whatever way makes most sense to you. And then depending on the award, there may be some language proficiency required. If you're planning to do teaching, make sure that you confirm your host institution's language of instruction. For research projects, what we require is language fluency sufficient to complete the research project. So what does that mean? For applicants that do not have any local language proficiency, you'll need to demonstrate the feasibility of conducting the research in English. So that means, you know, if you don't speak Arabic or French, you'll want to, in your application components, talk about whether you plan to work with a translator or, you know, for example, if you're going to be working in a lab, if you can feasibly complete the project using only English. Non-native speakers who have Arabic or French language abilities will be asked to complete a two-part language proficiency report. Part one is a self-evaluation, and part two asks you to register an external evaluator within the application as sort of a fourth letter of reference. This part of the report would be completed by an appropriate foreign language instructor through the online application reference system. A lot of applicants will ask a foreign language instructor on their home campus to fill it out. It is just a couple of short questions that they'll be asked to fill out, just attesting to the fact that you're being candid with us about your language abilities. There are also supplemental materials required for applicants in the arts, or architecture, writing, journalism. It's sort of an online portfolio. If you're not in one of these fields, do not submit supplemental materials. We will not attach them to your application unless you are in one of the fields. The four that are listed here are just some examples. There's a long list of fields that we would require supplemental materials from, which is generally the fine and performing arts and writing, journalism, poetry, things like that. And then the letter of invitation is, I would say, probably the most difficult part of the application. Well, for some applicants, can be the most difficult part of the application to complete, and it's something that, you know, being that we are in March and applications are not due until September 16th, you have a lot of time to get started on this, so I recommend, you know, really jumping on this piece first, really before you start on any of the other application materials. So depending on the award that you applied to, a letter of invitation may be required. If it says a strongly preferred or preferred, you will be at a disadvantage if you don't have one. However, your application will still be reviewed without it. Given, like I said, we have a lot of time between now and when applications are due, I recommend that even if it's not required or if it's optional, that you try to pursue one. It will strengthen your application a lot. So the letter of invitation is essentially a letter from the host institution that you would be partnering with for your teaching or research that outlines what you're being invited to do, the period of time that you're being invited for, and a really good letter will also go into a description of the host's interest in your project. The letter should be on official letterhead, and if it is not in English, you would need to include an English translation of it along with the original. And one of the most common questions I get from applicants is, how do I get a letter? If you do not already have contact in the host country of your own, or if the contact information is not already listed in the award description, which sometimes it is, we do have some recommendations. One is to use the resources on your home campus, such as the international office or your colleagues. Reach out to, you know, your Office of Merit Awards, your Fulbright Scholar Liaison. There may be resources that they have for your MOUs that your institution has, where they can sort of help you with that. You can also check to see if there are any Fulbright visiting scholars or scholars in residence on your campus in our Fulbright Scholar Directory. If you see that there's a visiting scholar from a country that you might be interested in going to, you can reach out to them, get to know them, and see if perhaps they would be interested in inviting you to their home institution after they finished their Fulbright. Another is, I mentioned, the Fulbright Scholar Directory. If you go into the Scholar Directory, you'll find a listing of going back all the way to, I believe it goes back to 2010, It lists the names, project titles, countries, and host institutions of our Fulbright alumni. So they are very helpful people. If you see someone who has previously gone to a country you're proposing to go to, you can reach out to them and ask for an introduction to their contacts. 99% of the time, our alumni are going to be very helpful. They've been in your situation before, so they're usually happy to make introductions for you. The Scholar Directory can also be used as just a jumping off point if you want to see where Fulbrighters have gone before to get sort of an idea of, maybe which universities in Morocco have hosted Fulbrighters before. It'll give you a list, and you can sort of go from there. Now, also, Google is your best friend. Look at the university websites in the host country, and you can typically locate contact information for different departments. More often than not, you can find this information with just a couple of keystrokes. I personally, and us at IIE, we do not keep the names or contact information for people at specific host institutions. So this part is going to require some hard work and ingenuity on your part. I would say that most, at least half, of applicants are coming into their Fulbright application without a particular host institution connecting that they're going to pursue. You're all sort of in the same boat in that you're sort of cold calling, cold emailing, if you will, seeing if there is a good fit between what you want to do and what the host institution is interested in. I always recommend that when you reach out to host institutions, that you include a copy of your CV, sort of a brief description of what you want to do, if you're proposing to teach, maybe some of the courses that you've taught in the past. But most importantly, make sure you're asking the question, what can I do for you, or what does your institution need? The Fulbright program is about this sort of mutually beneficial relationship. So make sure that you're reaching out and seeing what are maybe some of the courses that they would need you to teach based on what your expertise is in. And so I'm going to discuss a few award highlights in the region in just a moment, but I also encourage you to browse the catalog on your own. You can narrow down your search by region, country, discipline. You can even do a keyword search, which is all done through the advanced search feature. Discipline preferences are typically listed in the award description, but then the Middle East region also offers all discipline awards to almost every country, which are open to scholars in any field. So when you're searching the catalog, we recommend thinking about the relevance of your expertise and project to the host country. Ask yourself, how will the host country benefit, and what do you hope to achieve while on your grant? I'm asked all the time about where I think an applicant would be most competitive, and I'm happy to make recommendations if you are sort of caught between one or two awards. You can only apply to one award per competition, so choose wisely. But the simple answer to where will you be most competitive is the award descriptions are written by the host countries. They describe exactly what they're looking for. And so scholars are going to be most successful in countries where their skills match the desired specializations of the host country and where you can make a strong argument for what the benefit is to the host country. So why go to the Middle East and North Africa? The Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program to this region offers unique opportunities for scholars to immerse themselves in one of the most dynamic political and social landscapes in the world. In addition to generous stipends for housing and living expenses, embassy and commission staff in-country help incoming Fulbrighters secure suitable housing and introduce them to the community in the country. Grantees are not expected to navigate the landscape alone. There is commission or embassy on the staff that provide ample support to Fulbrighters. In most MENA countries, Fulbright also offers a generous dependent tuition reimbursement, meaning that a large portion, if not all, of the cost of the education, if you're bringing any school-age dependents with you, can be reimbursed at the end of your grant. Details about this award benefit and the stipend ranges are available under the Award Benefits tab under any of the award descriptions. And then beyond the logistics of conducting a grant in the region, when previous scholars have given us feedback about their experience doing a Fulbright in this part of the world. We hear the word transformative a lot, referring to both professional and personal aspects of life. Fulbrighters are welcomed into the communities that they conduct their grant activities in and are often, you know, invited to participate in weddings and Ramadan celebrations and other cultural events that a lot of Americans that travel to the region never have the chance to experience. And then scholars also often help to develop new courses and even academic programs, expand their host university's research capacity, sometimes even end up inviting faculty that they meet during their grant to be visiting scholars at their institution back in the U.S., developing relationships with scholars and students in the region. So the potential to make a lasting impact is enormous, particularly for Fulbrighters that decide to go to the Middle East and North Africa. So we offered a couple of new exciting innovations in the region. The first is the Flex option, which was designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country over shorter segments. So each segment would be at least 1 month long, and the maximum length of the Flex grant when you add up all of the segments would be 6 months. So you can take what would be a longer grant, a semester or a year-long grant, and split it up into two or three shorter segments, which you would spread over two academic years. And this isn't available everywhere. Flex, at least in the Middle East and North Africa, is only available in the countries that you see on your screen: Egypt, Kuwait, Morocco, the West Bank, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, UAE, and the Middle East Regional Research Award. So the Middle East Regional Research Program is another unique opportunity for you to consider. Scholars can apply to conduct research in two or more countries in the region, either the course of one continuous grant segment or as a flex grant. So for example, you could spend 2 months in Egypt, 2 months in Israel, and then 2 months in the West Bank. You can do it all in one go, or you can spread it out over 1 or 2 years. So not all countries are eligible for this award. Notably, Algeria and Tunisia cannot include proposals for this award just because of limitations we have with research projects in those two countries. A PhD is not required for this award, and applicants would need to get a letter of invitation from each host country that they're planning to go to. Okay, so now let's go into some of the other regional highlights. I want to just give a warning that I'm not going to be going into the stipend amounts for each country. You can discover that on your own by visiting the catalog of awards and navigating over to that award benefits tab. The catalog is your best friend, so answers to most of your questions are going to be there or on our website. So Algeria offers two awards. One is in all disciplines, and the other is in TEFL or Applied Linguistics. Both awards are for teaching only. So currently, there is no option to conduct research in Algeria. For both awards, applicants should expect to teach about 6 to 10 hours per week for 10 months. The grant is 10 months long, and there is no flexibility regarding the grant length. For the All Disciplines Awards, applicants at all degree levels will be considered, however, priority will be given to PhD recipients, and then a PhD is required for the TEFL Award. Eligible host institutions are listed in the award descriptions, and applicants should choose one of the universities off of the list. If you're interested in a host institution that is not on the list, let me know. I'm happy to reach out to the embassy to see if it would be possible, but there's no guarantee. But the institutions that are listed in the award description have already been signed off on by the embassy. And then with the exception of courses taught in English, such as like TEFL or American Literature, most fields are taught in French or Arabic, and thus one of the languages is required if you're applying for the All Disciplines Award. A working knowledge of French or Arabic is necessary to function in the community and communicate with the host institutions. A 1 or 2 page summary of the project you're going to need to submit in Arabic or French as a part of the application, except for proposals in the areas of English or American studies, which would be just submitted in English. The award descriptions will go into much more detail, but I just want to emphasize that the U.S. Embassy in Algeria is really keen to host scholars with significant language skills and some regional experience. And then I'm, you know, excited to let everybody know that we reopened the Fulbright U.S. Scholar to program to Egypt last year, and we expect it to remain open in the upcoming competition. Of course, final awards are contingent upon medical clearance by the government of Egypt, and the availability of funds and the security situation in the country. A broad array of opportunities exist in Egypt, including an all disciplines award, several grants at the American University in Cairo, and then there are some awards that are specifically for scholars in business administration, STEM, and visual and performing arts. So each award has slightly different requirements, preferences, and grant lengths, so please visit the catalog for specific details about eligibility and activities for each opportunity. I want to underscore that the Binational Fulbright Commission in Egypt is an incredible resource for applicants. They can help make contact with Egyptian universities, and they provide really ample support services for Fulbrighters while they're there on their grants. And I just want to also note that clearance from the government of Egypt is required for all Fulbright U.S. Scholar grants. So just keep that in mind when you're putting together your proposal. Most of you will probably have some knowledge of the country, what is, you know, feasible to actually be receive research clearance from the Egyptian government. And then while knowledge of Arabic is helpful, it is not required for these awards unless it's necessary to conduct the research that you're proposing to do. Okay, so for Israel, so Israel is really a top destination for U.S. scholars to the region, and you can teach or conduct research in pretty much any field. Any accredited institution of higher education can serve as a host institution, so the range of opportunities is very broad. This year's category, this year's awards are sort of in two main categories. We have the Senior Scholar Fellowships and the Postdoctoral Fellowships. The Fulbright Commission in Israel will probably award about 8 grants in each category. So there are 8 fellowships available for the Senior Scholars. For this award, you would need to be an assistant professor or higher to be considered a senior scholar. But additionally, the award welcomes applications from senior professionals or accomplished artists or writers. The program is open to all fields of study, and the scholars' proposed activities might include research, lecturing, or a combination of both. And this grant in particular is 4 months in length. Shorter or longer grant proposals will not be considered. A letter of invitation from an accredited Israeli institution is required at the time that you apply, and candidates should take into account that host institutions are obligated to make a financial contribution of $2,000 to the Fulbright Commission in Israel, which is credited towards your overall grant benefits. This can be a little bit complicated, and the Fulbright Commission in Israel is happy to talk about this with you. I'm going to be hosting a webinar specifically about Fulbright opportunities in Israel, and it's going to be co-hosted by me and a member of the staff of the Fulbright Commission in Israel. So, and that's going to be in April. So if any of you are interested in attending that webinar, you're interested in Israel, I highly recommend also attending that particular webinar. You can just reach out to me and I can send you an invitation. The Fulbright, so going back to the Senior Scholar Fellowships, you'll see that there are also several partnered awards in this category. These are awards where a university is already sort of offered to provide this financial contribution. So there are awards at Ben-Gurion University, Hebrew University, Tel Aviv University, and University of Haifa. And so the financial contribution is not something you need to pursue if you apply to one of those partnered awards. If you don't want to apply to one of those 4 universities, if there's another host institution in mind, you would apply under the general Senior Scholar Fellowship All Disciplines Award, and you would need to approach your host about the financial contribution. And then the Fulbright Commission Israel also plans to award usually about 8, maybe a little more, grants for postdoctoral scholars. And so these unique and prestigious grants are open to researchers in all academic disciplines and would support them for up to 2 academic years, either 1 or 2 academic years. And then you would need to include an expression of interest from a host institution, which is typically takes the form of acceptance into the host institution's postdoctoral fellowship program. According to Israeli regulations, a researcher would be considered a postdoc for a period of 5 years, beginning from the date of the award of his or her doctorate. So to be eligible for a Fulbright, a postdoc in Israel, candidates must not have received their degrees earlier than August of 2015 to be eligible. Similar to the Senior Scholar Fellowships, there are partnered awards at Ben-Gurion University, University of Haifa, the Weizmann Institute for Science, and the Israel Institute. Like I said, I'm going to be hosting a webinar in April specifically about opportunities in Israel. So if these opportunities interest you, I recommend tuning in for that one. Okay, I have a question here. So to be clear, Israeli partner institutions do not require the financial contribution. That includes Ben-Gurion University. Correct. So if you're applying to one of the 4 universities that I mentioned, Ben-Gurion, Hebrew University, Tel Aviv University, or University of Haifa, they've already agreed to the $2,000 financial contribution. So you still would need a letter of invitation from the host, but you wouldn't need to approach them about the financial contribution. And I really recommend coming to the next webinar, and you can pose some of these questions to the Fulbright Commission in Israel, and they'll be able to go into a little bit more detail about the requirements. And then the degree requirement, is it August of 2015 or 2014 for the 4-year limit? So it would be August of 2015 because the grants would be starting in academic year 2020. Okay, I'm going to move on to our next country. So for Jordan, there are 2 different award opportunities available. There's an All Disciplines and a TOEFL Award. The TOEFL Award is a teaching post for 1 or 2 semesters. And there's a detailed list of the preferred specializations within TOEFL and Applied Linguistics in the award description. But for both awards, a PhD is required if applicants are proposing to teach. For the All Disciplines Award, if you teach, you need a PhD. If you're going to do research and you happen to be in, a different field, we've seen applicants in film studies, in sort of blanking on different disciplines, but we have seen people without PhDs be approved for research, but not for teaching. So some of the priority disciplines for Jordan are migration studies, nursing, and business administration, but applications are welcome from scholars in all fields. The Fulbright Commission in Jordan is really committed to ensuring that each grantee becomes a member of their Fulbright family and feels that the Fulbright Commission, they operate out of what they call the Fulbright House, sort of becomes like a home away from home that's ever present from the day that you arrive in Jordan. So they are regularly assisting incoming Fulbrighters with everything from, finding suitable housing to identifying schools for any school-age dependents that are coming along. They also host a lot of cultural events and have a book and DVD lending library. So that is all to say that the Fulbright Commission is extraordinarily supportive to the grantees once they're in the host country. They're also usually pretty happy to help applicants if they're having issues reaching out to host institutions if they're not able to find contacts. So if you are interested in Jordan and you have already tried on your own to reach out to host institutions and you haven't had much luck, let me know and I can reach out to the commission for you. And usually they're they're able to help out with that piece. So new as of last year is our 7 to 10 month joint Morocco-Spain award. So Spain and Morocco have historically shared a lot of, you know, environmental, historical, and cultural links. And so the aim of this award in particular is to heighten awareness of those links. So applicants may teach, conduct research, or pursue a combination of teaching and research activities at Spanish and Moroccan universities or cultural centers, research institutions. The types of host institutions are pretty broad for this award. Projects that are comparative in nature and address issues linking the two countries are what they're desiring. And then no less than 40% of the grant period may be spent in either country. This award is open to mid-career and senior scholars in all disciplines and at all academic ranks, including artists and professionals. Then Morocco also offers a traditional all-disciplines award. And that one, it allows applicants to conduct full-time research, full-time teaching, or a combination of teaching and research. Something that we see oftentimes in Morocco is splitting semester by semester. So you would teach for a semester and then conduct research for a semester. That's not required, but just an idea of what we've seen there in the past. The flex option is also available for the All Disciplines Award to Morocco. For grants with a teaching element, a PhD is strongly preferred, along with at least 3 years of teaching experience. Applicants in the arts may have other qualifications. And so for research-only grants, professionals and other non-academics will be considered. Historically, about a third of all research grants have been in anthropology, and so the commission really does encourage social science research in Morocco. But a couple of other priority disciplines that they listed this year are American studies, agricultural sciences, fine arts, all social sciences, religious studies, and TEFL. So we offer, in the West Bank, we offer an all disciplines award for 5 to 10 months. This is in the West Bank only. Teaching, research, or a combination of teaching and research activities are available for this award, and the flex option is also available on the West Bank. There's a list of 11 eligible host institutions in the award description, and I encourage you to stick with these universities when choosing a host. We've even listed some contact information for administrators at each university for you in the award description, so you can contact these individuals to request a letter of invitation. There are security requirements that grantees must abide by if selected for teaching or doing research in the West Bank. And so these include using a list of approved checkpoints, living within the municipal boundaries of particular cities, and refraining from use of public buses. So please review these requirements if this award interests you. There's the country overview tab, which sort of goes over it. I want to mention this particular picture I took myself. I've been to the West Bank a number of times. It's a really lovely place to do a grant. This picture was taken in the city of Nablus, where they make a really, really amazing dessert called kanafa. So if any of you are interested in the West Bank, I really do recommend taking a look at Nablus as a host city. And then in Tunisia, we offer a 5 to 10 teaching or a combo teaching research opportunity. So research only is not permitted, but the flex opportunity is available. And while all disciplines are welcome, the U.S. Embassy in Tunisia has emphasized that proposals that support Tunisia's democratic and economic development are preferred. A letter of invitation is also preferred. Applications for all locations in Tunisia are welcomed. However, security considerations will be taken into account when they're reviewing the proposals. Teaching is in Arabic or French, with the exception of American studies, business, and law. So applicants really should discuss the language of instruction with their proposed host institutions, as there may be some level of French or Arabic required, depending on the institution, of course. Successful applicants must demonstrate their language skills and they're strong enough to excel in that environment. And then also to note if we have any people with MBAs. An MBA is sufficient for teaching business. However, a PhD is going to be required for all other disciplines. Then we have a ton of awards in the Gulf countries. In Bahrain, we have 3 awards. All of them are for 10 months and would begin in September of 2020. The host institutions in Bahrain will consider placements in a wide variety of fields. However, successful applicants are able to demonstrate how their field of study can contribute to promoting Bahrain's economic future. Any appropriate host institution is eligible for the All Disciplines Award, while the Business and Education Awards have specific host institutions already identified. And awards to Bahrain do require a PhD. Kuwait is also a really wonderful place to do a Fulbright. The grants are 4 to 9 months and would involve a combination of teaching and research. All fields are welcome. The flex option is also available here. Contact information for the public affairs section of the U.S. Embassy is actually listed in the award description, and they are very happy to assist in facilitating contact with host institutions. For Kuwait, a PhD and at least 5 years of teaching experience are strongly preferred. Grants to Oman may be anywhere between 5 and 10 months. There's a list of 6 eligible host institutions in the award description, though others will be considered on a case-by-case basis. We've also listed contact info for administrators at those institutions to help out with the letter of invitation. A PhD or an MD is preferred, but applicants with MBAs, MFAs, or other terminal degrees and substantial teaching experience will also be considered. And then moving on to Qatar, we have a new 12-month postdoctoral fellowship in water, energy, and the environment at Hamid bin Khalifa University. The postdoctoral research fellowship would involve working on water security research at a particular institution, the Qatar Environment and Energy Research Institute in Doha. And so the scholars' research would focus on aquifer mapping, groundwater mapping, and other water security-related issues for the region. The grant supports the statement of intent signed by NASA and HBKU. The project would potentially lead to the launch of a satellite-borne radar imaging technology that can be used to map underground aquifers in Qatar. So this is a really interesting award opportunity. It's sort of the applications for understanding climate change on our planet and water traces on planets like Mars are really interesting. So to be eligible, candidates must have received their PhD no earlier than 2013. And they also would need to have completed their PhD before they would begin, before they would depart to begin their postdoctoral research. For the All Disciplines Award to Qatar, you can spend 1 or 2 semesters teaching or conducting a combination of teaching and research activities. Research only is not permitted. There are 2 host institutions listed. Other hosts will not be considered. And then a PhD and at least 3 years of postdoctoral teaching experience are required. Our All Disciplines Award to Saudi Arabia is extraordinarily flexible. The flex option is a possibility. Grants can be anywhere from 3 to 10 months. There are, I think, more than 30 different eligible host institutions listed in the award description. Hosts often provide housing in Saudi Arabia, so that's something to consider. A PhD is required, and a letter of invitation is strongly preferred. Saudi Arabia, it is a conservative country, and Fulbrighters can, do often find life challenging, more so if their dependents join them on the grant. But the Public Affairs Office at the U.S. Embassy works really closely with host institutions to ensure that scholars' experiences are enjoyable and rewarding, and they are there, standing ready to support scholars with any issues they might encounter. And then finally, the last country I'm going to discuss today is the UAE. We have two separate awards for this country. One is for research projects, and the other is for projects that involve either teaching only or a combination of teaching and research. For the research award, the flex option is available. UAE University has recently established several new research centers that are particularly interested in hosting researchers in health sciences, biotechnology, water, public policy, and leadership. But you can go in other fields. That's just one, sort of a priority. The teaching award is 10 months, and scholars may be hosted by any academic institution. Preferred fields include environmental sciences, educational leadership, IT, material science, water resources, healthcare administration, tourism communication, and entrepreneurship. Okay, so that sort of concludes the highlights. Now I'd like to open up the virtual floor to any of your questions. So go ahead and type them into the chat box on your screen if you haven't already. Like I said at the beginning of the presentation, if your question is really specific to your situation, I may contact you privately after the webinar to follow up. I try to keep things in the webinar sort of broad and general and applicable to everybody. I've listed a couple of frequently asked questions on the screen as well. Okay, so we have a couple of questions that already came in. One is asking, if you are Jordanian, would you still be eligible for the Fulbright? So U.S. citizenship is required for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. If you hold dual citizenship, that is fine and not a problem. If you do not have U.S. citizenship, then this program would not be the program for you. You'll want to take a look at the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, which is administered through the Fulbright Commission, the U.S. Embassy in Jordan. If you just Google Fulbright Visiting Scholar Jordan, it'll take you directly to the page where you can apply for that one. Okay, I don't see any more questions. Okay, here they're coming in. Can you clarify the definition of research as it applies to art? Would photography classify? We have a very broad definition of research. So it's really, with your particular field, it is really on you to make the argument that what your proposed activities are qualify as research. Yes, we have seen people go and do photography projects, and that is considered research. We've seen artists go to a particular country to study the light of an area, and they are working on developing, works while they're there, studying this particular kind of light. I think that, it is a little bit more difficult to define as an artist, but we really leave that to you to make the argument that what you're proposing to do is considered research. Would having done a semester abroad during a bachelor's degree preclude someone from applying for a postdoc fellowship at that institute? No, that would not be an issue. The only limitation, I'm assuming this is for the postdoc in Israel, but if you cannot have already started your postdoctoral work in the country when you're applying for the award. So if you're already in Israel with your postdoc lined up, you can't then apply for additional Fulbright funding. But having spent previous time in the host country or at the host institution, particularly if it was, if it was done as an undergrad and it was only for a semester, that's not an issue. We do have a number of applicants that are applying to go back to their country of origin or going back to a university that they've already taught at before. For applicants that are coming from those categories, I would recommend that you, if you've already worked at an institution or you taught there for a year or got your PhD at an institution, then I would say look for another host institution in the country. But if you were only there for a semester abroad during your bachelor's degree, it's not an issue. Can you apply for multiple countries' awards? No, so you can only apply to one award per competition. Okay, is it possible to see project statements and sample extracts? So we do have some sample extracts from project statements on the website. So I would recommend going there first. Whether we have ones that are specific to your field, I don't know. But another possibility, if you don't see, project statement samples that are specific to your field, I would recommend taking a look at the scholar directory and see if there's anyone that has done a project similar to yours or that's in a similar field. And you could reach out to them and ask them if they'd be comfortable sharing some of their application materials. That's always a possibility as well. Okay. A couple more questions about fine arts. Would you need a PhD or would an MFA suffice? An MFA is considered the terminal degree for creative fields, so an MFA would be fine. If you are planning on teaching, university teaching, you would need to ask the host institution because in some countries, for example, in Jordan, in Algeria, there are requirements where you would have to submit a copy of your degree for approval to teach. So sometimes it will depend on the host institution, but broadly speaking, in the Fulbright program's opinion, an MFA is considered a terminal degree in the fine arts. Do you support research in Sudan? So, yes, we do, and I'm actually hosting a webinar a week from today about Fulbright opportunities in sub-Saharan Africa, and I'll be talking about our award in Sudan. So, Mona, I would recommend tuning in next week for that webinar if you're interested in Sudan. Okay, question about a letter of invitation. If I can't secure a letter of invitation from a faculty member with whom I would collaborate, can I secure a letter of invitation from a university or departmental dean? So that's fine. We've seen it go both ways. We generally recommend that you try to get a letter from the person that you would be collaborating with most closely. Because they're usually able to go into a little bit more detail about your project and why they, as a host institution, are interested in having you on campus. However, there are sometimes reasons why faculty are not allowed to write letters of invitation. Sometimes it has to come from higher up, and that's fine. It can come from anyone at the host institution. If it comes from a dean or department chair or something like that, that is also fine. Okay, I see a couple of questions here I think that are coming from foreign students talking about wanting to, when they're going to be completing their college certificates. finishing their exams. The program that I'm talking about here today is the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, which is for American professors, scholars, and professionals that want to go abroad to do teaching or research. If you're a student that's interested in coming to the U.S., then you would want to apply to the Fulbright Foreign Student Program, which if you just Google that program, you'll come to the webpage about how to apply through your home country. Okay. If I'm applying for a teaching award, can the invitation letter come from the school/dean? Yes, that's fine. A couple of questions about the letter of invitation and host institutions. How do we get it? How do we approach host institutions? I went over that a little bit earlier in the presentation, but I would recommend also visiting our website. We have a page on our website about developing host institution contacts, and there are recommendations. There are links to the Fulbright Scholar Directory where you can sort of search to see what previous Fulbrighters have done. So if you want to just shoot me an email, I can direct you to the place on the website where you can find all of that information. Is the National Geographic Fellowship still active? So the Nat Geo Fellowship is not through the U.S. Scholar Program. It's through the student program. So you'll need to go to navigate to the Fulbright U.S. Student Program website to learn more about that particular fellowship. I do not know whether – I don't think they're still accepting applications for that program, but you'll need to contact the student program about that particular opportunity. Okay, well, I don't see any more questions here. You can reach me at the email address you see on the screen, MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have if you have something that's a little bit more specific, or as you're going through, if you want me to direct you to resources, or you have questions that you would like me to pose to the Fulbright commissions or embassies, I'm happy to do that. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope this was helpful for everybody. And I am really excited to see your applications. The application deadline is September 16th. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me. Thank you, everyone.